Writer Hunter S. Thompson died in February 2005, but his death has done nothing to diminish interest in his work. In theaters now, there's a new documentary about him by Alex Gibney called Gonzo, The Life and Work of Dr. Hunter S. Thompson. The actor Johnny Depp reads passages from the writer's work. Critic at large John Power says it's particularly interesting to watch the film as we head toward this fall's presidential election.
The late Hunter Thompson came in many different flavors. There was the canny reporter who rode with the Hells Angels, the literary outlaw who battled psychedelic lizards, the political junkie who once said that he looked forward to election day the way sex addicts look forward to orgies. And then, of course, there was the culture hero, complete with aviator glasses and cigarette holder, whose persona would be set in stone by Doonesbury's Uncle Duke and by movies starring Bill Murray and Johnny Depp. They're all on display in Alex Gibney's Gonzo, The Life and Work of Dr. Hunter S. Thompson. Although not a great documentary, there's too much rock music and not enough perspective, the movie provides a useful primer on the last American writer to become a pop icon. And it's doubly worth seeing in this election year, because Thompson's political writing, especially Fear and Loathing on the Campaign Trail, 1972, reminds us that campaign coverage was once far more ambitious than it now is. Thompson's coverage of the 72 elections in Rolling Stone was probably the most sustained piece of mind-blowing political reportage ever to appear in our mass media. It was a witch's brew of prophetic jeremiad, drug-induced craziness, and unrepentant fictionalization. Placing this gonzo sensibility at the very center of the story, he wouldn't let mere factuality get in the way of the truth. And the strange thing was, millions of people of many different kinds loved his extravagance. Here, Pat Buchanan praises Thompson's work. And then Johnny Depp reads an example of what tickled Buchanan so very much.
There was no one quite like Hunter. It was on the edge and beyond the edge. And it was very funny. I remember he wrote about Hubert Humphrey, the great father of the civil rights movement. They ought to stuff Hubert in a goddamn bottle and send him out with the Japanese current.
There is no way to grasp what a shallow, contemptible, and hopelessly dishonest old hack Hubert Humphrey really is until you've followed him around for a while on the campaign trail. Hubert Humphrey is a treacherous, gutless old ward healer.
He had a view of the ridiculousness of it all.
Thank you. Shalom. Shalom.
And Hunter did some of his best work on the liberals.
Now, Thompson was hardly the only one to write with verve about presidential elections. From Norman Mailer's famous essay about John Kennedy in 1960 to Richard Ben Cramer's whopping book about the 1988 race, this was an era filled with memorable writing about the run for the White House. Still, even by these standards, Thompson was exceptional. His words were like a bracing acid bath. I read his coverage as it came out, and I remember laughing out loud at its sheer outrageousness, like the time he pretended that the dull, churlish Democratic candidate Edmund Muskie was actually using the Amazonian hallucinogen Ibogaine. Thompson was always a superb hater, and he was at his best filleting liberals like Humphrey and Muskie. He hated Nixon, too, of course, writing that Nixon could shake your hand and stab your back at the very same time. But he was actually far less insightful about Nixon than was, say, Gary Wills. And when it came time to championing politicians, he was far from reliable. It's worth remembering that the one candidate who most benefited from Thompson's gonzo endorsement was none other than Jimmy Carter. By Carter's election in 1976, Thompson's cultural moment had begun to fade. In his prime, the mainstream media had been so suffocatingly monolithic that he came off as a groundbreaking iconoclast, putting in print things that nobody else would dare. I remember gasping when he suggested that Humphrey should be castrated. But nobody today would gasp. For a generation raised on the fervor and coarseness of talk radio and the blogosphere, Thompson's wildest political writings probably seem almost routine. At the same time, the mainstream media learned precisely the wrong lesson from Thompson's career. Rather than grasping that the crucial thing is to be a strong, singular voice, political reporters saw that you can become a star by making yourself the center of the story, usually by playing the visionary pundit. As when Chris Matthews leapt to declare Hillary Clinton finished for losing New Hampshire on the night she actually won it. Where Thompson had no desire to become an insider, which left him free to say what he really thought, today's political media want to appear outspoken and independent, but also have a big network gig. Their patron saint is Tim Russert, who had the powerful mourning at his funeral. It was always Thompson's pride that he never saw a boat that he didn't want to rock. Such pride seems a bit old-fashioned at a time when magazines and TV news are terrified of offending advertisers or jeopardizing their access. We're inundated by campaign news, but none of it seems bold. If you want to feel some real fear and loathing, just ask yourself, would any big publication, including Rolling Stone, be willing to run Hunter Thompson's campaign coverage today?
John Powers is film critic for Vogue. You can download podcasts of the show on our website, freshair.npr.org.